What do hot temperatures do to us and to our climate? And how do we cope without further damaging the environment? Welcome to Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. I'm Salwa Khan. It's an important question and a tricky one. Using air conditioning has been our answer when temperatures rise outside. But air conditioning requires huge amounts of energy, which has been provided by fossil fuels, such as coal, oil, and gas, all of which pollute our air and the atmosphere. The damaging gases released by burning fossil fuels help trap the sun's energy, resulting in increasing global air temperatures. To cope, we run more air conditioning and use more fossil fuels and enter into what can be described as a truly vicious circle. Architects play a central role in designing the homes, commercial buildings, and public spaces we inhabit. By optimizing energy efficiency, they can reduce the carbon footprint of buildings while providing comfort for the people who live, work, and play in those structures. In this edition of Mothering Earth, you'll meet an architect whose goal is building places that minimize the inevitable environmental impact. She is Kalpana Sutaria and is the author of a book titled Cooling Our Environment, An Architect's Vision of Combating Global Warming. Sutaria lives in central Texas and grew up in a very hot climate in India. The memories of her childhood affect how she approaches her work as an architect.
It was my upbringing in Ahmedabad, India. My Jain grandparents and parents, very loving parents, inculcated the value of conservation in me, especially waste reduction. Ahmedabad is a very hot place, and the old city, which was built in the 15th century, has homes which are 300 to 400 years old. I grew up in a home that was outside this old city that my grandfather had built. And I experienced oppressive heat when outside temperatures were higher than 105 degrees for months during summer before the monsoon arrived. We had no fans and no air conditioning. My maternal grandparents had a home in the old city, which I was able to visit at times, and I felt the distinct difference between these two homes. It felt distinctly cooler. Finding comfort became my obsession. Now I have air conditioning in my home in Austin, but those experiences come alive when I learn about heat, stress, and suffering in many places.
Heat does affect people's health. Can you tell us how it affected you?
Yeah, so in the childhood home, I used to get heat strokes at times. I remember, you know, once my father was able to install ceiling fans in the night, and we had this one big room and with three, four people, my brothers also, they were all, you know, we were given a place to sleep. And I would turn on the fan and my brother would turn it off because he felt cold. So I probably had metabolism. I had hard time taking heat. After coming to Austin and right now, even though I have air conditioning, I suffer from allergies that, you know, become worse with increased heat and extended summer seasons, which have lengthened the pollen season. Hot weather affects ground level ozone and air pollution. So those who suffer from heat also, from allergies also feel those symptoms. People, especially outdoor workers, suffer from headaches, hay fever, sneezing, respiratory conditions related to lungs, heart-related diseases, kidney failures, dehydration, and heat strokes. You know, and you may not know this, I recently found out that only Seven states in the US have heat protection standards for workers, and they include California, Oregon, Colorado, Maryland, Washington, Minnesota, and Nevada.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan with Kalpana Sutaria, architect and author of Cooling Our Environment, An Architect's Vision of Combating Global Warming. Certainly, in recent centuries, we've had hot weather and had to find ways to cool ourselves. What are some of the ways that people have developed to help keep us cool?
It is easier to cope with heat in hot and dry climates than in hot and humid weather. Because in hot and dry climates, evaporation on our skin helps with, cooling. It has a cooling effect. People also built climate-responsive buildings by orienting homes to cooler north side, strategically locating windows for light and ventilation, insulating walls or making massive walls to hold heat, planting trees for shade, selecting light color surfaces, and more. Even now, some architects are paying attention to design the buildings using such features. It works well in dry climates, but to find comfort in humid climates, one needs mechanical means to cool those higher temperatures when humidity is also high. And you've heard about the heat index that weathermen talk about as to the actual impact of heat, and it is mainly because of humidity that, 100 degrees may feel like 108 degrees or more, because humidity has a way to sort of make you feel hotter.
When did air conditioning come on the scene? When was that developed?
In 1840s, a physician named John Gorey of Florida proposed an idea of cooling cities to relieve residents of, he called, the evils of high temperatures. His work laid out a foundation for modern air conditioning and refrigeration. And he was really referring to the patients who were suffering from malaria and other diseases. In Europe, Carl Lind founded a company in 1894 that developed summer beer. They were trying to find ways to cool themselves. Years later, a New York engineer named Willis Carrier, who experimented with laws of humidity control in his printing press, and he designed a cooling system using cooling coils and called it apparatus for treating air. In today's times, whenever it is affordable, people choose places with air conditioning, including in India and other developing countries. Even in cool places like Seattle, where my family lives, they have started installing air conditioning.
And that's because it's getting hotter, even in areas that used to be cool.
Exactly, exactly.
And what about fans? Fans have been around a long time, and they're pretty effective.
They are. In fact, the first fan, which was called Pankha, which was discovered in India, a very hot place. Mm-hmm. And in China, you've seen those very beautiful looking handheld fans. But then the fans were discovered in the US, and they have been in use for a very long time. In fact, earlier, before the air conditioning became a common, equipment to use, fans were what people used in their hot climates. Even in Austin and in old homes, they were used. Now, it is true, again, that fans give a lot more comfort in hot and dry climate, but it was humidity that drove people towards using air conditioning. But when fans are used in concert with air conditioning, you can really reduce the temperature by several degrees and have the same feeling of comfort.
But now air conditioning uses it's wonderful to have when you've got a hot climate, but it also uses a lot of energy. So what is the effect of air conditioning on our environment, environmentally speaking?
Yeah, it is very, very large. So there are two things air conditioning do. One is that you use energy, as you just said. And the more air conditioning you use, the more fossil fuels that we burn, which are responsible for increasing the heat trapping emissions and then eventually causing global warming. The second, and that's sort of more obvious reason for air conditioning warming the environment. But the second one, which is kind of unknown to most people, is the use of refrigerants in air conditioning. And refrigerants always leak. And they're used not just in air conditioning, they're used in refrigerators and other equipment, but mostly it's largely in air conditioning. So initially they use CFCs and HCFCs, which were the refrigerants used for many years, and they found out that these refrigerants were responsible in removing the ozone layer in the atmosphere at the upper level that protects us from ultraviolet radiation of the sun.
So both CFCs and HCFCs, which contain chlorine, are being phased out by 2030. As I understand it, HFCs, which replace them, are also being phased out because they continue to deplete the ozone layer. So what is replacing them?
So there are new refrigerants which are ammonia based, and they have different names, the R20 and R40, and so they are very easily available now in the US and other developing countries.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan here with Kalpana Sutaria, architect and author of Cooling Our Environment. We talk about a carbon footprint that a person has, but buildings also have a carbon footprint. How does where we get our energy from affect a building's carbon footprint?
You know, we get about 90%, I mean, globally, 90% of energy from coal, oil, and natural gas. Now, this varies by states, cities, countries, you know, because they are moving towards renewable energy. But I'm talking about average global energy use from fossil fuels is still very high. And so carbon dioxide is almost 80% of all greenhouse gases. So the higher the emissions, higher the carbon dioxide, and that is higher carbon footprint. So if you are lucky and you may have renewable energy source on your property, like solar panels, battery storage, or wind turbine, or geothermal, you can reduce your use of obviously fossil fuels. So, what is a carbon footprint? It's any activity that uses fossil fuels has carbon footprint on how much you use. So, for example, if you dry your clothes in the sun, you're not using natural gas or electricity. Therefore, your carbon footprint from that activity is zero. You use sun's energy. If you decide to bike to your grocery store or walk, you are not burning fossil fuels, and your carbon footprint from that activity is zero. So carbon footprint is by every activity, and you can participate by reducing fossil fuels one by one by one and reduce it to zero eventually. So buildings have a very high carbon, I mean, very high emissions. Like 40% of all emissions come from the building industry. And one example is cement. So almost all buildings you can think of and infrastructure projects, bridges and sidewalks and roads, and you know, they use cement. And cement production has so many steps. And I provide a diagram in my book showing how each step generates, uses so much fossil fuels to just bring that cement from the mines to all the way to your site. The process of building uses mostly fossil fuels. You know, all this equipment that you see going around on a building site, they all use fossil fuels. But it's the design of the building, right? That we want to design it such that buildings will use lower materials with lower carbon footprint. So cement, I've already mentioned, with rising awareness, building designers and builders are sensitive to lowering cement by replacing it with lime. And our ancestors used lime in, you know, the mortar and the, you know, walls and even the roofs. So that's one way, is to reduce cement.
Okay, so this is lime from limestone. And then I've heard about something called mass timber building. What is that?
It's an engineered wood product. And it is, you know, very, I mean, they've been experimenting to have 9, 10, 15 stories building, which uses mass timber, which really reduces the use of cement. And it's, I think as it develops more, it will reduce the use of cement and have widely available to people everywhere. Right now, it's expensive. But sustainably harvested wood can have lower carbon footprint. And to reduce energy, most things we can do is weatherization to stop leaks, insulation of walls and roofs to lower heat gain, building orientation of your house to avoid harsh sun, build resilient structures and keep them out of floodplain, native drought-resistant plants and trees, efficient cooling systems like heat pumps. And I have one in my house, and it's amazing how quickly it cools, you know, the space. And setting thermostat to a couple of degrees higher in summer, in concert with ceiling fans or fans, makes a very big difference in reducing energy load from air conditioning.
As we know, places are continuing to heat up. Where are they most affected? Where are the people that are most affected by global warming?
So I wish I could show you a graph that shows the rise in average global temperature. But people can look it up on NOAA or Berkeley Earth websites. I'm sure you know that 2023 was the hottest year since 1850, when the weather records were kept. In the U.S., that year we had 2,325 people who died due to extreme heat. But extreme heat is the deadliest of all climate-related hazards. According to World Meteorological Organization, and they say 489,000 heat-related deaths occurred every year around the world between 2000 to 2019. And most of them were in Asia or Europe. We don't quite see the impact in the US yet, but other parts of the world are really suffering. So according to NOAA, from 1980 to 1989, we had like 3.7 events annually, which cost $1 billion or more. That number shot up to 18 events on average per year from 2013 to 2022. And so what happened? These extreme weather events include heat, drought, wildfires, melting glaciers, sea level rise, winter storms, hailstorms, tornadoes, and more, and continue to devastate our communities each year. Home insurance rates in Texas have gone up by 22%. And this is why we need to find ways to lower harmful emissions that trap heat.
Right, and that's not just in Texas, but all over the country. You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan with Kalpana Sutaria, architect and author of Cooling Our Environment. If you were building a house for your family right now, how would you go about it? How would you situate the building? What materials would you use? What kind of strategies for heating and cooling?
Yeah. So I've mentioned some of the passive design strategies. And I'll go over it just so that it's kind of in that order. So building location. So some people have that luxury to like have a completely open site and then just make all the decisions. In that case, you can locate the building that accounts for site conditions and surrounding environment and directions of the sun and the wind and the rain. So that would allow cool light by blocking harsh sun and strategic location of windows for ventilation. And why is ventilation so important? Because in good weather days, one could use ventilation instead of jacking up the air conditioning. But that, for that, you need to have operable windows and located such that they, you know, wind direction, keeping wind direction in mind. Then plant native trees and vegetation strategically for shade and light. Now, weatherization is one of the most important things we can do by sealing the leaks to, you know, not allowing air in. Roofing materials to reflect heat instead of absorbing it. So let me tell you this, dark roofs, which we find everywhere in Texas in this hot climate, they absorb 90% of solar radiation, while light color roofs reflect 75% of solar radiation. They reflect it. So, I mean, I immediately, when I got a chance, I replaced my roof with very light color roof that reflected. But I think most people just are stuck with it. You know, they somehow, you know, homeowners associations require it, or they select it without, you know, giving a thought to that. But it is possible to design buildings all the way to net zero. And there are examples, not very many, but there are examples of people doing that by using all this passive climate design. You can also generate energy at the site to meet all your electricity needs and charge your electric vehicles. Rainwater collection helps, but it is not easy to meet your need in urban situations because it requires a lot of space to put those big tanks to collect rain. And it's not affordable for most people. But one should really incorporate low flow fixtures and low water use, you know, again, fixtures everywhere in the house, which really helps a lot.
And what materials would you recommend using for the walls?
Light color materials with, and the materials you want to use are locally available. So now I think, you know, there are like materials which are insulated materials using straw bale and other, you know, wood waste and things like that, which is called hemp, actually. Some of those materials have very high insulation values. Even if you use light color bricks or light color, the I would not encourage plastics, but there are materials which are very well made, which can be used as long as they are light color materials and not, coming from China or from very long distance. Try to see the materials which are, locally constructed.
So, in addition to doing what we can as homeowners, such as maybe adding solar panels to your house, do you see other things the average person could do to lower their carbon footprint?
All our activities add to adding carbon or greenhouse gas emissions to the environment, right? So I have this model that I prepared, and that is in my last chapter of the book, which I believe that we can do, you can influence more than you think in by thinking about every activity that you do. Buildings is just one, but there are other sectors, right? The transportation, energy generation, retail, agriculture. And agriculture is a very important one because, by the type of food we try to, select to eat, we know that meat has very high carbon footprint. So if we learn about all our activities, what each time, if we can think about it, it's and we can take some action towards reducing our use of fossil fuels, that helps. But to me, I think the biggest action that we can take is to talk to our lawmakers. And this is the work that I do for the Citizens Climate Lobby as a volunteer. Because when a policy takes into effect, it has a very large impact. We still, as citizens and as constituents, have to push for all this. And we cannot give up. I believe in what Joan Baez said, that action is the antidote to despair. And we can't despair. We continue to ask our legislators to take action. We take personal actions and we ask for policies. And all combined, we can really create a place to cool our environment, and it's better for health and wellness of our people and people all around the world, because they are suffering a lot more than what we are in the US.
That's all for now. This has been Mothering Earth on sustainably cooling our environment. Thanks so much to our guest, Kalpana Sutaria, architect and author. And thanks so much to you for listening. Our website is mothering-earth.com. Until next time, this is Salwa Khan signing off for Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. The views and opinions expressed on Mothering Earth do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of this station.